Welcome to Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn and Seton Hall University class of 1985. My great pleasure to be back with you today. The purpose of Thank God for Monday is to inspire you, our listeners, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as to how to utilize the information we provide today. Take full accountability for the decisions you make and a resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of Thank God for Monday is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a most special guest. Her name is Kimberly B. Cummings. Kimberly is a career and leadership development expert and entrepreneur. She is also the author of a great book, Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You'll Love. Hello and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Kimberly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
The honor is all ours to have someone of your expertise in ilk today, that's for sure. Sadly, we don't have as much time as we'd like, so we're just going to jump right into the deep end of the pool, if that's okay for you.
Yes, sounds good.
Mentioned a little bit earlier, Next Move, Best Move, this fabulous book you've written. Tell us about this new book.
Of course. So this is really a career guide to help professionals understand where they are in the world of work, what they'd like to do to make that move. I think many times people hear the word transition and they immediately think like, oh, I got to go get another job. That's what it's about. But it's not just about getting another job. It's really about transitioning from just taking job after job after job and finally building a career for yourself and moving into being a leader, and not just a leader in the traditional sense of being a manager and managing people, but really having control over the trajectory of your career in the workforce. It's what I honestly wish that I had years and years and years ago when I started my career.
That's two of us. I had a 30-year career in big pharmaceuticals before becoming a Franciscan brother. This book would have been a tremendous help to me, no doubt about that. If I may ask, Kimberly, was that part of the motivation for you to write this great book?
It was. I remember when I graduated college, I think my only goal at that time was to not move back to my parents' house. That was really, can I make enough money to not move back home to the small town I was raised in, Connecticut? And there were so many, like most folks, you know, bumps and bruises that you go along the way that you needed. And then as I started to build my career and career development, I saw that there was so much information that wasn't necessarily shared, or certain groups, especially women and people of color, didn't find accessible to them. And I wanted to be able to have a manual that didn't just give you the inspiration of like, oh my gosh, this is what I did and it was incredible, but this is exactly step by step by step what happened, and this is how you can do it. So much so that at the end of each chapter, I have a section called Your Next Move, What You Need to Do. I joke and call that the Cliff Notes. If you don't want to read the whole book and hear all the stories, just go to the Your Next Move section, and that will give you your homework.
It's so interesting because one of the things as a Franciscan brother I've learned over the years is sharing the good is so important. And you are a great role model of sharing the good. You could have held on to all of this good, Kimberly, but no, you've shared it with the world. Thank you so much for that. Now, one of the things that you are on record stating is that serving as a people leader is a privilege, not a rite of passage. Help us out, please, Kimberly, because this is kind of contrary to what we're hearing. What do you mean by this, and why do you believe such?
Oh, gosh, you made me nervous when you said that I'm on record. What's he going to pull out? But I think so many times in the world of work, you become a manager almost by default. You have a lot of work on your plate. You have built yourself up to a certain point. So then they're like, okay, great. How about you become a manager and we split your workload so you can do more? It literally is a rite of passage to scaling up whatever ladder it is in your career. It just happens, honestly, whether you like it or not, for many people. Many times there's a point in your career where it's hard to continue to stay an individual contributor or like not managing people. So by default, if you want to move up, you've got to manage people. And therefore, it becomes a rite of passage to move up, not really something that people make a conscious decision to do or have a desire to do, but to be in control, to have influence over someone else's career is a privilege. It is a responsibility that we can't just take so lightly because we're thinking about ourselves, right? Like, I want to move up. I want to be a manager, a director, a VP, or whatever title it is. We need to be much more conscious of the responsibility managers have to literally change someone's career and develop them, not just being task-oriented, like get this done, get this done, get this done. But how are you developing the people? So there is such a privilege that I think is not valued in the workplace. And there's so many stats that show people leave managers, they don't leave companies. Managers have to be better in order to retain talent.
I don't mean to be mean with this next follow-up question, but are there some people when management or leadership comes to them and said, we're going to promote you into a managerial position, who should say thank you, but no thank you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. There are people who just aren't going to be good managers. They need assistance. And I think it's hard because let's say that person said they're going to get promoted. They're going to manage a team. Most of the time, people don't want to turn down that promotion because it probably means you're turning down money, right?
Sure.
100%. But what would be helpful is that there was more of an education to teach someone how to manage a team approach on really developing themselves and that team, because not all managers are created equal, right? In the book, I talk about how I've only had like a few good managers, I think, in my career. It's so important not to just take that lightly and be like, I'm just doing this for myself. And how can you get the resources, the backing, the education to ensure that you really can lead the people who are on your team?
From my experience, both in the pharma world and in religious life, that is critical, no doubt about it. Now, we could see already from the few minutes that we've been together and from your great book, you're a great believer in relationships.
Yes.
Matter of fact, one of your chapters in the book is entitled, Relationships Are Still Everything. Help us out, please, Kimberly. How can someone cultivate working relationships that will support their career goals and the relationships they need?
So many times I call it relationship building instead of networking, because networking has this stigma of, you know, life pre-COVID, when you used to walk into a room, everyone had a cocktail in their hand and you had to walk up to a stranger and just hope that they would be interested in speaking with you. For many folks, especially introverts, that you feel the heart racing, you don't know what to say, you're anxious about it, but it's really building relationships with people in an authentic way to support you and your career, right? Like, relationships aren't just for the workforce. They are in general, how to get things done with more ease. That's why I say they're still everything. I think back in the day they'd say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. I think you still have to know your stuff, right? You still have to know your stuff, expedite your success a little bit more. So I break down quite a few relationship types that you need. I think number one, you need your peers inside and outside of your company. I always believe in having internal to your company and external to your company. It's so important not just to be focused so much internally, not only for benchmarking, but just keeping opportunities open for yourself. You need to kind of be outside of your company to see an external point of view. So peers are people who are generally on the same level as you, who you can connect with, understand, you may collaborate with on projects. You have your coaches, or sometimes I call them teachers. These are the folks who literally can teach you a skill. So for me, I'm someone who I can't do Excel to save my life. You want to see tears come down my eyes, have me make a pivot table. It just doesn't work. I don't care if you tell me to go to YouTube. I still can't figure it out. I just can't. Excel is not my thing. I always need teachers or coaches in that arena. For other people, that could be the person who helps you before a big presentation, helps you build that deck to put it together or fine tune another skill. Then we have mentors. That's where a lot of the big conversation is, where people always talk about needing mentorship. Generally, those are the folks who've been there, done that, and can help you as you're trying to move to that next level. Sometimes it could be reverse mentoring too, where someone super senior is working with someone more junior to help them in some aspect in the world of work. And then last but not least is that special one. That's the sponsor, where I'm so excited to hear the conversation moving. The sponsor is the person who can pick you up from where you are to where you'd like to be, or what I like to say, where you rightfully belong. The big difference there is that they have the power and the influence. Not every mentor has literally pull you to where you'd like to be. But sponsors, if they have the bandwidth, they can still mentor you. But the big thing is that they are in rooms you will not be in. You are not invited to the table that these sponsors are in, and they can advocate for you and pull you to that next place in your career.
Wow. So these are really critical. And I love the distinctions you made there. But certainly that sponsor, it sounds like, as you say, is really critical, because he or she is in rooms where you can't be, and they can advocate for you. Wow, that's empowering, no doubt about it. Now, one of the other nice things you discuss is that when making a career move, taking stock of experiences and knowing when it's time to go, these are really important. Can you expound on these a little for us, please, Kimberly?
Yes, I think that's probably one of my favorite chapters, where I talk about how to know when it's time to go, because I'm a big believer in maximizing the role that you're in. I think many times we think about moving to the next, because maybe we're bored, or we had a bad conversation with our boss, or we feel like maybe there's a glass ceiling. But it's important to maximize where you are to get everything you can out of that opportunity before moving to the next job. Unless, of course, there's an extenuating circumstance where you really just have to get out of there. Then by all means, get out. But it's important to look at all of the experiences that you've had. What have you learned? What have you been able to add to your career toolkit, like I say? What are the experiences that will help you in your next role? And what can you get out of where you are before you go? Many times when you can maximize your current job and you can get all the skills that you can possibly gain, it can only help you go further, faster in that next role. And also can help you when we're talking about salary negotiation too, which a lot of people like to talk about the money, but the more skills that you have, the more experiences you've been able to acquire, and being able to articulate those, so you have to be able to do that assessment. That's what really helps you when you get to the table for salary negotiations.
Later on, if it's okay with you, we're gonna really peel the onion about salary negotiations, because we understand you're an international expert in this regard, certainly. So we really want to tap into your expertise. But a couple more questions in between, if we may. Let's say someone really is looking for that new career. They want to make that next move, best move. Can they create an action plan to do such? And if so, how should they go about doing that, Kimberly?
Oh, 100%. I didn't mention it earlier, but this is the real reason why I wrote my book, because at the end of the book, it pulls you to creating your own 2-year career strategy. I believe that we have to make sure that our moves are intentional and stop treating jobs like, I joke and say, old relationship partners, right? That person who, you know, they break up on Wednesday, they go out on Friday, meet someone new with them on Monday, and then the next weekend, same thing happens. They just keep on finding another person, and the friends on the outside are looking like, don't you want to take some time to think about it, or like better understand who you want to partner yourself with? But they just keep on creating the cycle. And we do the same thing with jobs many times. It wasn't good. Let me get another one. Ooh, my boss is crazy in this job. Let me go get another one. I think I want to try this. And you just keep on getting job after job after job, but you're not being intentional. You're essentially always hoping the grass is greener without doing any work to understand if that's actually the right fit. That's where a career strategy really comes into play. So when I'm working with my clients, I have an accelerator program where I help people do this. Essentially, I'd like to snap my fingers and say, where do you see yourself in 10 years? And when I say snap, I want you to tell me quick. Where do you see yourself in 10 years? Like the first thing that really comes to your mind. And then we break that down. Where do you need to be in 5 years to get where you want to be in 10? Then we cut it in half again. Where do you need to be in 2 years to get where you want to be in 5 to get where you want to be in 10? And then we reverse engineer. What are the things we need to do to get to that mark? Because the long-term goal is more of an anchor, right? We need something to anchor ourselves to, but that can change. It's not that we have to do it. We can move and change as we see fit. I joke and say that, you know, magic happens in your career where that sponsor can come in and move you someplace quicker than you ever thought, or an opportunity that's great can shift. And we redo the strategy for that. But the goal is that when we think about 2 years, we think about the relationships that we need to build, the experiences that we need to have, the skills that we need to master. And we start to put that into a plan, thinking about the projects, the people, the experiences, all the things that we need to put together to really build that 2-year career strategy so we can be intentional with our next best move.
One of the words that I've heard you use a couple of times, intentional. How important is this intentionality, please, Kimberly?
Intentionality is important with all things, right? Instead of guessing and hoping and wishing and praying something happens, taking a moment to really determine what is actually your next best move, and not just in career, right? We think about this with so many different things. Taking a minute to kind of settle yourself and think about what you really want is so important so that when you look back, you know why you made each move. You know what your rationale was in making that move. We know hindsight is 20/20. If I look back on my career, I am someplace completely different than where I thought I would be when I graduated school. Completely different in no way, shape, or form what I imagined doing what I'm doing right now. But with each, articulate why I made that move, what skill I was looking to gain, what experience that I think was necessary at that time. That intentionality is helpful for yourself, but also helpful when you think about interviews, right? When someone asks you, why are you interested in coming to this company? Why is this particular role what you're interested in? What are you hoping to gain from here? That takes intentionality to have a great answer.
That provides such a great perspective on why we all need to be very intentional, especially in this 21st century work environment. So thanks for sharing all this good of yours today. Listeners, for anyone who's just tuned in, welcome to Thank God for Monday. We're the weekly talk show here on WSOU 89.5 FM, locally streamed around the world at www.wsou.net. I'm Brother Greg from the class of 85, much more important than me. We've got a very special guest with us today. Her name is Kimberly B. Cummings. She's a career and leadership development expert and entrepreneur, and she has authored a great book, Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You Love, calling in from beautiful Newark, New Jersey, right next door. And we've been talking about a whole lot of things. We were just talking about intentionality. We were talking about why she was so motivated to write this book and share all the good that she has. And we are now going to shift gears, if that's okay, Kimberly, a bit. Because as I said before, you are known as an international expert in salary negotiation. And in particular, because closing the gender pay gap is more important than ever, one of the great skills you have is helping women negotiate higher salary, if we understand correctly. It sounds like you've got a great 3-step process for such. Can you briefly share a little bit about this 3-step process, please?
Of course. So the number one piece of advice I give everyone when it comes to negotiating your salary is reminding them that negotiating your salary starts the moment you interact with the company. everyone is expecting to have that conversation at the end, right? Where the company says, oh my gosh, Greg, I am so excited to offer you a salary of $150,000 per year. What do you say? People are expecting to get the offer and then have to negotiate. But salary negotiation begins way, 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 way in advance of that. The company, at the same time you're evaluating the company, they're evaluating you and beginning to attach a dollar amount based upon how you're interviewing and the experience they're having with you. So number one, I tell my clients, you have to assess the value of the role and yourself. So understanding, what does the market pay for this role? What does the industry pay? What does the company and other companies who are their competitors pay for this type of role? Figuring out what that range is, then figuring out based upon your experience, where do you feel like you fit in there? So let's say the range is $120,000 to $180,000 per year. And most of the time you'll find something really wide like that too, sometimes wider, but you know, you've been in your career for, let's say, 5 to 7 years. So you're not really at the 120, 130 range, but you haven't really been there the full 10. So you're comfortable coming in. Maybe you want to say like 150 to 165. Try and find that 10 to 15K to ask you. You need to be prepared to talk about this in the interview, in the initial phone screening, honestly, when the recruiter, more recruiters more than ever are asking this, how much, like, what are you looking to get compensated for in this role to make sure that you're in alignment? Because no one wants to interview for a job only to find out, what if that company said, oh, we only have a budget of $80,000 a year. If you're expecting 150, 160, that job ain't for you. It is not for you. So it really starts with assessing your value, understanding the value of that role. And then I have a lot that I talk about with practicing. So much comes into your own confidence when we're speaking about salary negotiation, articulating your own value throughout the entire process. They're making an offer not just based upon how much the role is slated for at that company, but based upon the value that you're looking to contribute or what they believe you can contribute if selected for that opportunity. Articulate that value consistently through your interviews is one of the biggest hurdles that I see when working with my clients, and also what I drive home a lot of in the book.
You made a bold decision to leave corporate America at a time when it was like the height of your career. Share a little bit, please, about the circumstance and how did you make this courageous decision?
Oh my gosh. So let me just say, I loved my corporate job. And I still miss it. I miss like the people, right? So for me, my last corporate job, I left in May 2021. I served as the director of global diversity talent acquisition strategy at a Fortune 100 company in financial services. So I was building out the strategy of how to recruit, retain, and promote women and people of color across the globe. And I loved it. Oh my gosh, it was such a phenomenal career. Phenomenal job that I had and career that I was building. But at the same time, I was building my company, Manifest Yourself, which is a leadership development company. And I'd been building my company. I founded it back in 2013. And slowly but surely, things were ramping up and they were moving and grooving. And then, you know, I signed a book deal in 2020. The book just came out in June. So I left my job in May. Book came out in June. Start to see some of the synergies here. Things just got too big so fast. Like, and let me not say fast, because I've been building something since 2013, so not fast, but sometimes I'm still surprised. It just got too much. I think I literally prayed for years and I told myself, I was like, okay, when I cannot do both, that is when I'll leave. And when I tell you that prayer worked, because it got to the point where it was I could not manage doing both. And for me, that was really the decision. And even in interviews in every job I've had probably since 2016, because I knew I wanted to do this at some point, I always said like, oh, well, you know, you're building your business. Would you, you know, if things happen and they got too crazy, would you stop your business? And I was like, no, I'm not stopping it. And you have to be comfortable with that. Otherwise, I'm not the candidate for you. I always told myself, Manifest Yourself is not something that I would kind of push to the wayside. So when it got to the level that it did, and I was so exhausted. I was so tired, so overwhelmed. I knew that it was time. I had to, honestly, for my health and for myself. I'm like, I knew there's no better time than any to kind of go off on my own, give it a go. I'd be more upset if I didn't give it a go. So I'm like, I knew I had to do it. And I also have great relationships. So if I ever want to go back, I'm sure that I can go back. I hope go back there if I wanted to, or to another company. I have great relationships because relationships are still, I'm sure that if that happened, I'd be more than happy to go back if it worked or served me at that time.
This is such a motivating story because if I perceive it correctly, it's not like you were in the corporate world and then one day said, I want to have my own business and write a book and you leave. So you were kind of doing both in parallel at the same time. And then eventually, as you say, it got so big, so fast that you made this courageous decision to say, now it's time, certainly. And it's very interesting. It sounds like your body, your heart, your mind, everything was telling you now it's time to leave that corporate job and to really jump into the deep end of the pool and put your whole self into your business, your writing, et cetera. Is that basically what's happened, Kimberly?
Oh, definitely. And, oh, yes. And I would just say, like, first and foremost, like, I'm a little crazy because it was not easy. People say, like, oh, do you recommend, you know, working full time and running a business full time? Because it ended up being two full time jobs at one point. I just worked all the time. So I don't always recommend that. I probably should have left in hindsight. I probably should have left at least 4 to 6 months earlier, but I really loved my job. I love my job. I love my team, all of that. But I definitely was building them at the same time. And it just got way too much. You know, I had no life. I didn't sleep much, you know. I'm a Cancer. I want to talk about astrological signs. I'm a little emotional. So I was a little teary-eyed all the time. I was just so overwhelmed. It got to the point.
You are.
I literally could not do both. I love both companies that I had.
Wow. And as you said and alluded to, if for some reason you chose in a year, 5 years, whenever, to go back, you always have the option to do that. So that, I think, is motivated for our listeners as well today. Few who may be on the fence are saying, you know, maybe time for me. I've kind of started my own gig here, and it may be time to jump in the deep end of the pool. You are a role model for us, Kimberly. There's no doubt about it. Our motto here at Seton Hall is hazard zed forward, advance despite difficulties. You are a fabulous role model of that. So thank you again for being with us today. Before we go our separate ways, is there one piece of final career advice? You shared so many nuggets today. One final piece you'd like to share with us today?
Definitely, it's the Manifest Yourself. My company's a manifesto. And the manifesto is you must believe in yourself and your vision. When you do this, you will manifest the life you desire. So many times when we talk about career and leadership development, we have this idea of where we'd like to be, this ideal state of our career, of ourselves, of our leadership capabilities, our management, the work that we're doing. And honestly, it can feel so far away. I share in the book that I thought I was going to be like Gabrielle Union in this old movie called Two Can Play at That Game. But I had no idea how I was going to get there. Her character's name was Connie Spaulding. She had this power red suit, high ponytail, beautiful car, corner office, like all the things. And I had no idea how I was going to get there. It seemed so large and so daunting. And I think when we think about our careers, so many times it can feel like that, but we have to believe that our vision is something we can bring to the forefront, and it's the vision plus the strategy, the intentional strategy to get you there makes it possible. So I always like to share that. Like, it's so much about sometimes our minds and kind of setting our minds on the right path than some of the other external things.
Oh, that's very inspiring for us. We've saved the most important question for last, Kimberly. From where can our loyal listeners purchase Next Move, and Best Follow You, please?
Yes. So you can purchase the book, Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You'll Love, everywhere books are sold. If you want the link, go to nextmovebestmovebook.com. You'll find everything there. And if you want to follow me online, if you look up Kimberly B. Cummings on LinkedIn or Kim B. Cummings on Instagram, please feel free to follow, reach out to me. I would love to have a conversation.
Kimberly B. Cummings, author of this great book, Next Move, Best Move, Transitioning into a Career You Love. We can't thank you enough for being our special guest today, and thank God for Monday. Yes, you've enlightened us. Much more, you've inspired us. I'm sure the listeners and I can feel very, very confident, much more so in ourselves, whether it's salary negotiation, whether it's following our vision, whether it's honoring our dreams. We wish you continued success and great joy in this wonderful sharing of the good and role modeling of advance despite difficulties, hazards, and forward. So again, many thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, sadly, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying, my hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Kimberly B. Cummings does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Have a great week, everyone.